Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to Indie Birth series of podcasts, Taking Back Birth. I'm Marin, and I have been doing these podcasts for several months now as I am going through my own pregnancy. Today, I am about 26 weeks mid-pregnancy, and as I've mentioned in the last couple of podcasts, just starting to think about birth more clearly now. It's still quite a bit away, but yet it's becoming more real every day since I'm, you know, mid-pregnancy and getting there. So I came across a topic this week that I really wanted to share with you because I think it's so important that we understand at least a little bit of physiology. And before you get put off by anything that sounds too boring, we're going to talk today about things you can do in your pregnancy to try and ensure a birth that flows hormonally and that is physiological, meaning the way our bodies were meant to do it. So I think this is particularly relevant and important to most of you listening because you've probably already decided to take responsibility for your pregnancy and your birth. Now, whether or not that means you have an attendant or a midwife or a doctor really doesn't matter. You've decided that you're going to look to yourself first. And part of that, I think, is educating ourselves or reminding ourselves that the physiological process of birth is really perfect. And it's not just standalone birth. Sure, birth is physiologically perfect, but I think that pregnancy is too. And if we're able to really nurture ourselves in all kinds of ways during pregnancy, if we make our prenatal care all-encompassing, you know, emotional support, spiritual support, connections with others, taking care of our bodies, you know, doing all of these things that I would say is true prenatal care, then we're able to approach birth in that way too. And again, part of it is understanding, I think, how pregnancy flows into birth. They're not isolated parts of our lives. It really is the childbearing year. And the childbearing year, of course, is going to include mothering and breastfeeding and nurturing this relationship with this new baby. So today we're thinking a little bit farther than pregnancy for those reasons. And I think it's really helpful, at least for me, to remind myself of these things. And learning about the way birth works, although I know how birth works, every time I review it or teach it or share it, I'm not much more encouraged that for me I'm on the right path, that you know, having what I would call an undisturbed birth really is the way to go for most normal, healthy women for the reasons that we'll go into today. So you're probably wondering what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about oxytocin in pregnancy today, and that's quite a big subject, but we'll get into what oxytocin actually is, if you don't already know. But before I started sort of outlining what I was going to talk about today, I did a quick search, Google search, of oxytocin in pregnancy. I wanted to see what kind of comes up. So mostly what comes up wasn't a surprise, but a lot about synthetic oxytocin, which we'll talk about. A lot about the drug that's used to induce women or augment labor, you know, in hospital settings, really shouldn't be used anywhere else, and the risks of that. So, you know, sign of the times, I suppose, at least in the birth world, that there was very little about natural oxytocin. And it made me feel that I was touching on an important subject today because I think many people don't know what oxytocin is. And if they do, it's just sort of vague and they don't have a great understanding of what it means in pregnancy and birth and how this ensures this physiological process that we talk so much about. So you may or may not be aware of how it works in birth, but we'll get there. But if you are aware, this is still good information, I think, for you to share, either the podcast or just when you're talking to women about birth, because we need to make others aware. You know, I think a lot of the fear about birth in this country, in the US or in the world, you could say, is just we've lost touch you know, with the way things work. And although not everybody needs to connect their brain with that information, many of us do. And for many people, it's helpful to kind of see on paper or hear science behind, okay, why would we, you know, leave birth alone for the most part, unless there was a problem? I mean, why wouldn't we, you know, want to touch the baby after birth if it wasn't our baby? I mean, there's all these questions that come up that really kind of go along with routine. What is routine in birth? So it's important that we are secure in the physiological process. I think it can help us make decisions as well as we get closer to birth. So I myself took a course, an actual course in oxytocin through the midwifery school that I graduated from, which is Ancient Art of Midwifery Institute. And anybody, I believe, can take this oxytocin course. So contact me for more information or find AAMI online and contact somebody there if you're interested in taking this oxytocin course. It was really fun. And we learned a ton. So I would recommend it to anybody, mom, midwife, student midwife, doula. And you know, it was mainly focused on learning about oxytocin, but how we can increase it in pregnancy. And that's what I'm going to talk about today, because heck, I'm still pregnant. You may still be pregnant. And I wanted to know, especially when I finished this course, what more I could find out about oxytocin in pregnancy. What does it mean? Why is it important? You know, as someone that walks with other women and in my own pregnancies, why should I care? You know, how does it actually affect the outcome? So that's today. So oxytocin is a chemical in our own bodies. It's natural. We don't do anything or take anything to make it. It's a neuropeptide, and it's released by the pituitary gland. So most people have an idea of this already, and if they don't, you can give them some examples. So it would be released. The big one is during and after orgasm. For both male and females, it's released during breastfeeding and certainly birth, for sure. It has a bunch of different names, and there's probably more than I have here. The love hormone is a big one, the trust hormone, the love molecule. There's lots of names for oxytocin. But it doesn't have to be something that's released in as intimate settings, you know, as orgasm or birth. This can be released just when you see a friend that you really like and, you know, you see them coming down the street or they knock on your door and you give them a hug. It can be, we'll go over many more of these, but, you know, hugging your child or picking up your child. So there's so many ways that our bodies can feel good. And mainly the point is it's through interaction with other people, mostly. And because it's mainly about interaction between people, this chemical, when it's released, fosters a connection or attachment between the people. So again, that's not necessarily a sexual thing, although that, you know, is certainly what links sexual partners. But it can, again, just be friends. Mother-baby is the, you know, biggest example probably in our world that it fosters a connection or attachment between. But it truly can be anybody. So I know as somebody that sees birth regularly that oxytocin gets distributed throughout the room at a birth. Even if you're standing on the sidelines watching, you know, you don't have to be directly involved or touching anything or doing anything to feel the oxytocin literally just flowing through the room. So I think that's important to think about, and that's probably another episode when you think about who to invite to your birth and what that means. There's actually a chemical connection between people at intimate gatherings such as birth. So oxytocin is really awesome for those reasons, and it's also great because it suppresses fear and anxiety. So it suppresses the amygdala. I always wonder if I'm saying that right. The region of the brain that controls fear and anxiety and then kind of disperses it throughout the body. So think about that. It's kind of our own natural chill pill, you know, when you get fearful or anxious, that there is sort of another chemical that your body's able to produce to suppress that. And of course, you know, you'd want to suppress that. Sometimes in a more of a fight or flight situation, then, you know, those things are all working perfectly. But of course, in birth, we don't want fear and anxiety. So oxytocin would be super important. The really obvious reason oxytocin is super important in birth, at least, is the receptors, the nerve receptors for women are mainly in our uterus. They're also in breast tissue. They're also released in the placenta and the amnion. But because there's so many receptors for oxytocin in our uterus, that's where the contractions sort of come from. So the release of oxytocin causes the contraction. And this is a very integral part of how the labor process actually works. And we'll get more into that in a bit. So again, in labor, it's released from receptors in the uterus. And it's released in pulses. So that is said so that you contrast it with it being released continuously, like it would be in a synthetic oxytocin situation. So for those that don't know, synthetic oxytocin is a pharmaceutical, you know, it's created in a lab. The trade name in the US is Pitocin. And when it's used, say, in an induction situation in a hospital, you know, it's artificial, obviously. It's put through an IV. It's not being released by the pituitary gland. It's being injected into the bloodstream. So we'll talk more about that. But the point there is that when it's released naturally by your body, it's released in pulses and can never be too much. I mean, the body has feedback mechanisms and loops that, you know, keep us from overstimulating ourselves or overstimulating the uterus in a natural situation. So you really can't get too much in labor. It should be just enough. But of course, there are things that influence how much you're going to get in the first place, such as fear and anxiety and more that we'll talk about. So there you have it. You know what oxytocin is now, if you didn't already. You know the feeling. And, you know, right now you can turn around and pet your dog or cat or hug your child or, you know, make a phone call to somebody that you love and hear their voice. And you will feel that feeling come over you, that feeling of the love hormone. So, again, when I took the course and even lately being pregnant myself, I just got thinking about what does this mean in pregnancy? You know, I feel pretty well aware, and you do too now, how it works, at least simply in labor. But what about pregnancy, and does it matter? So the cool thing is that our brain actually changes in pregnancy. It is amazing to me that, well, so many organs and systems change and adapt to our pregnant bodies and the new way our metabolism needs to work and, you know, different things need to work to keep our bodies going and to take care of this baby and placenta. So pregnant women are actually primed to release and enjoy oxytocin, not just because the uterus is growing larger, but the brain is actually changing. So these are some stats from studies. Over the course of pregnancy, the pituitary gland increases in size 120% to 136% and decreases slowly after delivery. The overall weight of the pituitary gland increases 30 to 100% in pregnancy. I mean, isn't that amazing? There are more receptors, obviously, for oxytocin. And yeah, our brains actually change so that you would assume the possibility for, you know, releasing oxytocin and interpreting the sensation is greater. So I thought that was pretty amazing. And then it made me realize that it's true. We really are, I believe, in pregnancy, supposed to sort of enjoy oxytocin and play around with it and get really familiar with it because it does matter. it does matter, and it will sort of segue into an effective birth situation. It only makes sense. So the most famous study that you may have heard of was one done in 2007. Feldman was the author. Feldman et al. Study in 2007. And this is really groundbreaking, I think. The study measured plasma oxytocin levels in pregnant women, so blood levels of oxytocin of pregnant women in their first, second, and third trimesters. So they had a literal lab value. And then they also included surveys and interviews, also observations, so all kinds of stuff. And the scientists use all of the information to compute how levels of oxytocin in pregnancy affect bonding. So that's really interesting. And one of the things I was kind of looking for, you know, what does it matter? Does it matter if we have oxytocin during pregnancy? How much? You know, what if we have some, does it equate to anything in birth or after? So again, this study looked at how pregnancy oxytocin levels related to afterbirth bonding. And we know we need oxytocin to bond with our babies. So those two things are related. So mothers with high levels of oxytocin in the first trimester engaged in more bonding behaviors after birth. Higher levels of oxytocin across the entire pregnancy and postpartum had, in quotes, more behaviors that support the formation of an exclusive relationship. So fancy words for saying mom and baby were connected. You know, the mom cares what happens to her baby. She makes eye contact. She wants to cuddle and kiss the baby. You know, all of the behaviors that are seen as bonding were more when the women had higher levels of oxytocin in pregnancy. So the findings show that oxytocin may predict bonding behavior and that bonding is mental and behavioral. So, you know, that's a really cool study, I think. I like studies, but I don't think it's anything we don't already know. You know, because what do you have to do to get oxytocin flowing in your body? You have to be connected to people. You know, you want to be surrounded by people you love and trust in pregnancy. You know, you want to have a bond, whether it's with a midwife or with a friend or a partner. These are the things that pregnant women crave. So it makes perfect sense that there's a reason. We don't crave it just because we're needy pregnant women. We might crave it because in the end, it means we bond with these babies. We have this chemical flowing through our bodies already. Another point that it makes me realize, I think, is that, you know, it's, again, not just the birth that determines how we feel towards our babies. I mean, heaven knows, not every birth winds up to be a simple, beautiful home birth. Sometimes things happen. Or sometimes it's just not what we expect. You know, the outcome is just different or unexpected. So it's not just the birth that determines how we feel towards our babies, or if we bond with them, or we'll get to, you know, if something like postpartum depression is part of the picture. It's not just the birth. It really is the whole experience. So again, this study illustrates why some women may be more maternal and seem to be better bonded to their babies. It's one component, I think, to look at. There are certainly others. Oxytocin may also influence how many or how much nutrients reach the baby. So there was a study with rats, and of course those aren't humans, but still, that they were given injections of oxytocin, which of course is, you know, synthetic. And the rats were allowed to eat as much as they want along with the oxytocin injections, and these rats had bigger babies. So, you know, that's a study that I, for me, would require a lot more delving into to really understand, you know, if what's related and what's not. But I don't think that's completely surprising if there is a correlation between oxytocin and, you know, I don't want to say bigger, but well-nourished babies. It makes sense to me, at least, that when moms are feeling good, and their diets are healthy and not restricted, that they're going to have healthy babies. So that one takes a little bit more interpretation-wise, but I thought it was interesting nonetheless. So there was another study, and I think this is one of the last ones, in 2011. So at this point, these people doing the study were aware of the Feldman study and many others. So the one that we talked about the plasma oxytocin levels and the way women bonded with their babies. So they kind of were trying to build on that, it looked like to me, and show the relationship between prenatal oxytocin levels, so the same sort of thing, and postpartum depression. So women were assessed in this study between 30 and 34 weeks of pregnancy, and the oxytocin level in their blood was taken. And then they were reassessed postpartum with a survey for postpartum depression. And it seemed to be that there was a correlation between the low levels of oxytocin in pregnancy and postpartum depression. So there also seemed like there were, you know, were definitely other things to look at, and definitely more work to be done in that area. But for someone that is anticipating postpartum depression, you know, it certainly couldn't hurt. And again, not to supplement with synthetic oxytocin at all. That's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about how to get more natural oxytocin in your pregnancy. But it certainly couldn't hurt, right? If you were somebody that has experienced depression postpartum, you know, that you could pay attention to oxytocin and the way it was looking and feeling in your pregnancy and see. Certainly can't hurt. So more research to be done there, but again, not really surprising, I don't think. So this brings us to the point of today, which is pregnancy does matter. Of course, we knew that on so many levels, pregnancy matters, but oxytocin levels in pregnancy matter. So it's just a time, I think, for us to think about, again, whether we're pregnant or with somebody else, what behaviors in pregnancy might contribute to release of oxytocin? You know, what behaviors in pregnancy or lifestyle or choices might contribute to there not being a lot of oxytocin? So again, it comes back to that feeling. You know, oxytocin is a good feeling. Happy, you know, connected, nurtured, loved. Whereas, you know, the lack of oxytocin could be interpreted a bunch of different ways, but, you know, a stressful situation certainly isn't full of oxytocin, nor is a fearful situation. So I think just knowing these simple things, we can shape our pregnancies a little differently or just be more aware of, you know, what we're engaging in or how we're feeling. So again, we want the real thing, no synthetic oxytocin here. It certainly, you know, is something that's available, but that's not what we're talking about. But the good news is natural oxytocin is pretty easy to come by. You know, for most people, it's just being aware of that's what the body's doing. And the brain is very responsive to producing oxytocin. So it's not something you have to try real hard, I don't think, assuming there are other people in your life. And it's not something that costs money or takes a lot of time. So if you're working with women or you're pregnant, some ideas on how to get more oxytocin in your pregnancy. There's so many. I could just probably keep listing them all day and you could find your own, the ones that mean things to you. So here's some I've come up with. Positive birth stories, hearing the stories, watching the stories, right? Positive social interaction, and that could be, you know, with other mothers, women, anybody. Hugging. Hugging is a really awesome way to release oxytocin. And I know when I took this class, part of our assignment was to hug a certain number of people each day and just kind of see how that was affecting our day or our life or our mood. And it's really an easy, simple thing to do and pretty telling. So I think, you know, that's why midwives at least often hug people. I know I am a hugger generally. I like to hug the women I'm working with if that's, you know, seeming appropriate and mutual. And I never knew why exactly until discovering oxytocin, because it does create that connection, you know, and it's not a false, fake connection. A hug is I think, really real. And, you know, that's what it is about a hug that brings people together, that bonds them. So, more ways to get oxytocin in your pregnancy: having positive prenatal care, in quotes, whatever that is for you. So, positive prenatal care to me means anything that is you nurturing you. It's anybody nurturing you. It's support and love. There's no fear in this sort of positive prenatal care. And just imagine, if you haven't already experienced it, to have a whole pregnancy where that's the goal: to nurture, to love, to be nurtured, to be loved, and to be as fearless and as possible. The point is to feel good in pregnancy, and oxytocin is the reason. So for those of us that have partners in pregnancy, of course, that's a huge way to release oxytocin with our families in general. But with a partner, again, it doesn't have to be super intimate, although it can be. It can just be time, spending time with them, taking a walk, watching a movie, eating. Eating is a huge way to release oxytocin as well. So it can just be a really great meal. It can be eating chocolate, something you really enjoy. It can just be talking. And really, anything you enjoy that sort of brings that warm, yummy feeling over you releases oxytocin. So yoga, cooking, working in your garden, you know, playing with your kids, singing songs, dancing. I mean, the list, you could go on and on forever. And then, of course, you know, you get to bonding with the baby and all kinds of things after birth. But the pregnancy list is just long, 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 long. Anything that makes you feel good. And the goal would be as many a day as you could do. As many of these positive oxytocin-releasing activities you could do in a day. And again, not a lot of time. It's free. Petting your dog, petting your cat, whatever. There's so many. So try this next week and take a few days and try and remember to hug people that's appropriate with, to, you know, to pet your animals and to hug your children and to take time to look at your partner and have a conversation or make time to go out together and see if it changes how you feel over the day and over the bigger picture. So our bodies are really smart, as you know, in many ways. And the more oxytocin we produce, the more oxytocin receptors we make. So that's really cool. However, for a pregnant woman, she will make more oxytocin receptors in her uterus as she gets closer to being in labor. So I think that's a really cool thing to mention because, you know, how many people are trying to put themselves into labor early or their midwife wants them to take herbs or it might be a full-on pharmaceutical induction at a hospital. So think about how that makes no sense, right? Because if the receptors aren't there because the woman isn't ready, her body isn't ready, then what on earth is an induction supposed to accomplish? And in many cases, you know, an induction does fail. And that's why it fails. There are not enough receptors yet. And if it doesn't fail, if the woman does something like castor oil or sex or walking and it does propel her into labor, then in my opinion, it means she was ready, that the receptors were there. They needed, you know, they didn't need, but they got extra stimulation and it sort of flipped her over into labor. But it would have happened anyway, naturally. So I think that's just really interesting, as I myself have heard of many, many inductions that did not work, especially in the hospital. You can't just pump someone full of synthetic oxytocin and expect it to put them into labor if the receptors aren't there. So very interesting. So on the opposite side of the coin, how would we hinder oxytocin release in pregnancy? I think we have to know that as well. It's good to be conscious about how we can increase it, but what are we doing without even knowing it? What are most women doing without even knowing that they are reducing oxytocin in pregnancy? And by the studies we've cited today, they're not just affecting their pregnancies. They are affecting their bonding, potentially, and probably their birth. So there's lots of examples. Again, we could go on forever. Anything that brings stress and fear in pregnancy is going to be a situation where oxytocin is not released. It's just almost not possible to opposing. So just think of the normal pregnancy, testing, ultrasound, numbers, anything that's routine, anything that comes up that causes her stress, whether it's, legitimate or not, whether it's real or not, not trusting the caregiver, not being able to give that caregiver a hug and feel like that's a honest, true thing to do. Not trusting that person, not wanting to make eye contact, not trusting what they tell you, having doubts about them being at your birth. Yeah, those things all release adrenaline and not oxytocin. Hearing scary birth stories. I think that's a big one. So sometimes we do that to ourselves, right? We read them online or somebody sort of, corners us and wants to tell us their really awful story. We can watch scary ones as well, maybe without meaning to, but those things all create fear and anxiety. So anything that's preparing you for confrontation during your birth, and that's going to be another podcast, but birth plans or, again, planning to birth in a hospital and being ready to fight them on this, and this, or having a doula because you're going to have to argue your way through your birth. This is just so counterintuitive to the hormones that are needed for an efficient birth and for bonding. So if you've ever wondered, why those things aren't good, despite that they don't feel good and nobody wants to argue through their birth, that's why. The hormonal flow gets interrupted, and we need that hormonal flow to have an effective labor. So the baby benefits as well from oxytocin. I think that needs to be said. The baby really feels what we feel. I believe that in pregnancy. So I think that's a great thing to consider. When you're releasing your oxytocin all day, you're not just doing it for you and for your birth, but it's because your baby feels those benefits too. And I'm sure that the babies feel whatever words they would come up with, warm and safe, comforted, loved. So many benefits to increasing your oxytocin throughout the day. I'm sure you can come up with your list of things in your life that help you release oxytocin and those that don't. And the idea is obviously to get as many as you can that increase your levels. And not that, we're probably going to get lab draws, any of us. It doesn't even matter. Just that we feel good and that we focus on feeling good. And we know there is actually a chemical way to feel good and that it does matter. So anecdotally, of course, I haven't done my own study on oxytocin. But I feel like women that, don't focus on how they can bring more oxytocin into their lives, maybe they don't even know. I think most people don't even know. But their lives are really stressful. And, there's hardly ever feeling good. There's not a lot of connection that, I think births can be harder. And that's not a blame thing. I think all of us as pregnant women do the best we can. But again, if we're aware of something like this, how can we change? How can we change what we do and what we feel? I think we have a lot of power there. So let's see. There's a couple more studies. Oh, I thought this one was sort of interesting. In another study, men in committed relationships who were given synthetic oxytocin kept a further distance between themselves and unknown women they might find attractive. So, what's that mean as far as pregnancy? Well, this is just my interpretation, but it means to me that, there definitely is a bond between men and women, or, the study was done on men and women. I'm sure that it could, be women and women or whatever you want, but the study was men and women, and that, it does bond people. Oxytocin bonds people, which is why it's called the trust hormone. So I think that does have a place in pregnancy, again, for people that are in monogamous, committed relationships, that their relationship, if it's a positive thing, really can be nurtured and sort of used, for lack of a better word, to, create a good deal of oxytocin in the pregnancy. That's kind of obvious, I think, but, it's cool. So, as I mentioned, the oxytocin receptor cells in the uterus increase towards the end of pregnancy. And the receptors and, you know, oxytocin doesn't stand alone. There are certainly other hormones or endorphins and, you know, all kinds of things that our bodies use to go into labor and then to perpetuate a labor. But oxytocin is probably the most well-known and probably the most important. So if the receptors are there and, you know, it's a normal, healthy pregnancy and all the other hormones are in alignment, then really an efficient labor should be stimulated when it's time without any help. And that means, to me, strong contractions, you know, not too strong, but strong enough to birth a baby within hours. And obviously, there's huge variation in there. Some women birth in an hour, some take a lot longer. But, you know, in an ideal sort of chemical situation, you know, a birth shouldn't take sort of forever. It should be a matter of hours, because that's how efficient oxytocin is in just sort of a typical situation. So again, the oxytocin stimulates contractions and prostaglandins. And so this makes for a really effective labor, really effective contractions where they're not too painful, but they're effective. And, you know, there's that feedback loop where there's pain relief along with the oxytocin being released and the endorphins. I mean, it's a whole complex system. But then, of course, when the baby is born, the oxytocin is still really strong. In fact, oxytocin is at its absolute highest level at birth when the baby's out. And the uterus continues to contract after birth. And that is the way that, you know, in a, again, normal, perfect physiological birth, the bleeding is really limited and that there's not a risk of hemorrhage because the oxytocin is just sky high and that is going to contract the uterus. So I think that's probably pretty basic for most people that know anything about birth. But if not, then there you have it. It's a great way to explain how something like oxytocin works in birth and why it is so perfect and why we should leave it alone. So if fear and anxiety sort of negate the release of oxytocin, then I think that's the best argument, if we need one, that we have for leaving birth alone when all is well and allowing it to be undisturbed or physiological or whatever you want to call it. Leave the hormones alone. Leave the woman alone. You know, because disturbing that balance means disturbing this process. And the process is perfect for labor and, you know, for the uterus and the mom and baby after birth. So there is a perfect balance there. We want to limit the fear and anxiety, not only because it doesn't feel good, but because chemically it just doesn't make sense. And we want to limit adrenaline. So the only time adrenaline really has a place in birth is towards when the baby's coming out. And this surge of adrenaline, also known as the fetal ejection reflex, basically, you know, gets the baby out. So the adrenaline at that particular moment is appropriate and part of this beautiful hormonal cocktail, as Michelle Odon calls it. But before then and after then, really, adrenaline is not appropriate and not something we want to, you know, induce in the mom or her situation or her space during birth. So oxytocin is released with touch, very much with touch, if that feels good to her. So, you know, not all touch during birth is wanted, and in those cases, maybe not. But if a mom wants to be touched or stroked or hugged or whatever it is by people she loves, that will help her release more oxytocin. Psychological support certainly does. Warmth certainly does. So another reason for a dark, warm room for labor is that this enhances the oxytocin that's released. It's again released when eating food. And not that most women eat tons of food through a labor, but I think there is a really good argument for, you know, hospital births where women aren't allowed to eat. Not only is that just dangerous for other reasons, but, you know, if it can release oxytocin, we really want as much oxytocin releasing things to happen during labor as well as pregnancy. So oxytocin also increases the pain tolerance Anne is anti-anxiety. So again, we're just kind of coming back to the same things, which is the more good feelings we can have during our pregnancies and our labors really do serve us, because the process, you know, works better when we're not feeling anxious and like it's painful. Oxytocin is responsible for that moment. That's what I call it, the moment after birth, or the moment of birth, that moment when your baby is out and you're touching your baby, you're seeing your baby for the first time, you're kissing the baby all over, you're smelling the baby, you're smiling, you're holding the baby to your heart, to your chest. That moment, there's nothing like that moment. If you haven't experienced it, it is the greatest thing that has ever been created. And that is the moment of highest oxytocin. And even if you haven't experienced it, if you've been at a birth, or heck, even if you watch a birth video, that moment, that's the moment when people will cry, or what, you know, whatever reaction they're going to have, because it's that intense. So again, birth really left alone for the mom and baby to experience that moment with no interference, no touching, no talking, no anything. Other than them gazing into each other's eyes, is just the most perfect thing that could happen. It's perfect for the mom and baby to bond. It's perfect for the baby to sort of acclimate to this world and transition. It's perfect for the breastfeeding that's going to take place. It's all perfect, all because of oxytocin. So just a couple minutes before we end, you know, that's a pretty big moment. When I talk about the moment after birth, I get all caught up in it, and then it's hard to talk about other stuff, because I think that's the moment that I really look forward to, whether it's my birth or whether I'm witnessing someone else's. That's the reason, you know, why all this knowledge and education is so important, because to be able to experience that moment as it's meant to be is like nothing else. So hopefully you got that. Just a couple things about synthetic oxytocin, just because, and that again in the U.S. is called Pitocin. It has another name in England and such. I forget what the name is, but it's synthetic. So, you know, it's made in a lab and it's released in an IV. It's not released by the pituitary, but it's released right into the bloodstream, and it may stimulate the uterus. In fact, it definitely stimulates the uterus in most cases, can definitely overstimulate the uterus, but it does not promote bonding. So this wonderful oxytocin that we release, you know, is responsible for so many things. And the most important we could say, you know, sort of for the future of humans, is this bond between mom and baby. And that is huge. So to get something synthetic that gets a baby out, you know, it's strange. And I know, because I have myself been induced by Pitocin way back when. It's a different feeling. And I can't even put it into words. And it was my first baby, so I didn't have anything to compare it to. But there wasn't that moment. Even though I was overjoyed and in love with my daughter, it wasn't the same. Something didn't compute, because the Pitocin does not cross the blood-brain barrier. So it's simply contracting the uterus, just like muscle contractions. You don't get the good feeling. Obviously, there's a long, long, long list of risks and side effects for synthetic oxytocin. And uterine rupture is one, and that can happen to moms that have had no babies, that can happen to moms that have had lots of babies, that can happen to moms that have had C-sections or haven't had C-sections. The risk of uterine rupture is real. And when I have, you know, been at a rare hospital birth, or even my own way back when, I don't remember anyone mentioning that as a risk, and it's a true risk. Postpartum hemorrhage is a true risk of synthetic oxytocin, although they'll use it to control the hemorrhage. You know, later on, the uterus may decide that without the Pitocin, it's not going to contract and bleed a lot, and that's not good. So in labor, Pitocin can also decrease the fetal heart rate, cause nausea and vomiting, seizures, decrease blood pressure. There's all kinds of complications that eventually, you know, for many women lead to a C-section. So, you know, we just spent a good deal of time talking about why real oxytocin is so valuable and wonderful and important. And it's all, you know, sort of the opposite reasons why synthetic is not. And increasing the rate of C-section, you know, if that's the ultimate side effect, then that's not a good thing. for, you know, many reasons. But again, we're talking about experiencing that hormonal cocktail after birth and being able to bond with this baby, not just for that moment, but for the future, for a good breastfeeding relationship, for a nurturing attachment relationship between mom and baby. It's that valuable. So that ends my little spiel or big spiel today on oxytocin in pregnancy. I hope that you're able to share this information with other women. And I hope that if nothing else, it just gives you something to think about and a greater understanding of how things work and why pregnancy really does matter and why oxytocin in pregnancy really does matter. So thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to know more about the hormones of birth and all of the other things that go into this cocktail and create what we call an undisturbed birth or a physiological birth, then please sign up for our 5-week online class series. You can do it at your own pace. And, you know, at least 2 out of the 5 classes are spent on understanding these hormones in more detail and how we can use them to create a physiological birth experience. So thanks so much. Catch you next time.